Joining us now live by phone is Ralph Dumain, librarian and archivist of the C.L.R. James Institute, a nonprofit organization that supports research of all kinds into James. The Institute takes no political positions and endorses no particular viewpoint or interpretation of James's work. Ralph Dumain, welcome to you.
And thank you very much. Good afternoon.
You've made it clear to me, and I want to make it clear, that your comments today represent only your own personal views on C.L.R. James. Ralph, I know you'd like to focus in on what James thought and wrote about in the 40s and 50s while in the U.S. Why is James's so-called American period so important in your mind?
Well, it's so important because that is where he developed. The group that he worked with, the Johnson Forest Tendency, that is when they developed key aspects of their theoretical methodology and extended it into a number of areas of research, beyond what James had already accomplished, which you've already heard, in the Black Jacobins. And before the other masterwork, which I don't think was mentioned by your previous two speakers, Beyond a Boundary, which was published in 1963, which was a social history of West Indian cricket that attempted to explain what it meant for these colonized people in the West Indies to appropriate this colonial game of cricket. Those two works alone have immortalized James in 20th century intellectual history, and they are mentioned in any reference book that deals with these subjects or that deals with James. But sandwiched in between 1938 and 1963 was James's essential work during the American period, in which he perfected a theoretical perspective beyond what he had already attained in the Black Jacobins.
Give us an example, then, and we can talk about a few of his insights, of the kinds of innovations or insights that C.L.R. James had in the area of theory during the 40s and 50s.
Will do. Much of this was developed jointly with what is called the Johnson Forest Tendency, which was this little study group within the Trotskyist movement. Nobody used their real names. Everybody used pseudonyms. Pseudonyms. So James's main pseudonym, among many pseudonyms, was J.R. Johnson. And the other leader of this tendency was Raya Dunayevskaya, whose pseudonym was Freddie Forrest, hence Johnson Forest Tendency. There were other other important members. The most best-known member is Grace Lee Boggs, who had studied philosophy in university. And there were some other important people as well, such as the little-known Willie Gorman, who studied abolitionism in the Civil War and so forth, and auto worker Marty Glaberman, and also James Boggs, a Black American activist who later became known in his own right. So there was this study group that was formed within the Trotskyist movement, just a small group of people. And they did, and these people did not have credentials. They were autodidacts. They had no university position. They were a minority within a minority within a minority of the working class movement. And, Grace had a doctorate in philosophy, but basically they were studying on their own and doing things that nobody else in the English-speaking world was doing.
And what kinds of things were they reading and studying?
Okay, well, first of all, the only thing that existed in English, it was Herbert Marcuse, who brought Hegel back into the English-speaking world with Reason and Revolution in 1941. And Marcuse also did something that had not been done. He discussed Marx's economic and philosophic manuscripts of 1844, which had never been discussed in any language. He was the first to write about them. He put a discussion of that into that book. Therefore, James and his associates, they needed to restudy and rethink the entire foundations of Marxism, because not only to find out what had gone wrong with the Soviet Union being opposed to Stalinism, but also to find out what had gone wrong with Trotskyism. They thought Trotskyism and Trotsky was wrong, and that foundationally there was a problem. And just like Lenin sat in the library in Zurich, Switzerland during World War I studying Hegel, so it was necessary to redefine his own perspective. So the Johnson Forest people felt it was necessary to restudy Hegel and Marx to redefine Marxism for their time. So what they did was, and again, even academics were not interested in Hegel. Hegel was not a persona, he was not particularly well accepted in the English-speaking world at that time. And they took off from where Marcuse had, the pointers that Marcuse had given. They studied Hegel. They also studied Marx's Capital. They also did something. The manuscripts, the Marxist manuscripts, were not translated into English. They were not fully translated into English until, I think, the early 1960s or perhaps the end of the 50s. So what they did was they had Grace translate three of Marx's key manuscripts. They published it in an obscure mimeograph bulletin in 1947 that nobody ever read, and they added their own commentary. So what they did was they studied Hegel, they studied Capital, they studied the young Marx. They had this project of what they called Americanizing Bolshevism, was to translate the language of Marxism into American experience, because it was all based upon analysis of Europe, which the average American would have to know a lot more than they knew to even understand that, and that wouldn't be to understand their own country. So these people studied things like abolitionism in the Civil War, which was still had not been adequately studied even in the United States, except by people like Du Bois, who'd studied Reconstruction and so forth. They did an original analysis of abolitionism and of the Civil War and Lincoln and so forth, but theoretically speaking, what they wanted to understand was these key insights from Hegel, for example, how to analyze Capital, how to analyze historical development, and to analyze things like the labor process, because their idea was that Trotsky was wrong in focusing on the Soviet Union and previous Marxists were incorrect in just thinking of socialism as state property, as the abolition of private property. For James and his associates, what was important about Marx's theory is that it was grounded in the alienation of the worker in the workplace, which can be found in Marx's early manuscripts and through a detailed study of Capital as well. So they decided to ground this, to ground their study of Marx in the foundations of the alienation of the worker in the workplace. And they were very much interested in shop floor organization and allowing workers on the shop floor to give their own voices about their experiences, not necessarily filtered or mediated through labor leaders and bureaucrats and so forth.
So in other words, worker self-organization was very important to them.
That was the key. They also felt eventually that the vanguard party concept had outlived its historical usefulness. They broke with that concept. They left the Trotskyist movement in 1951 and went out on their own. But worker self-organization was indeed the very foundation of their perspective. And one of James's major projects was dealing with the major problem of the 20th century, which is bureaucracy, which is oppressive bureaucratic organizations, and, of course, the emergence of new elites and the abuse of power within revolutionary social movements.
Rolf Dumain is librarian and archivist of the C.L.R. James Institute. If you want to check them out online, it's www.clrjamesinstitute.org. We'll have a link to their website on our website, livingroomradio.org. So, Rolf, if C.L.R. James and his circle rejected vanguardism, this idea that a relatively small a group of people would somehow lead a socialist revolution, then how did they see revolution arising in the U.S., if at all?
Well, there are two things. One, they were also pioneers, and in this is largely because of James's contribution. The Communist Party, of course, had placed the black struggle in a very important position in America. I mean, they were probably the most revolutionary organization in terms of dealing with black issues, except for during World War II when they muted that in favor of supporting the war effort. But the Communist Party, because of the Comintern told them to in 1928, did make the black question an essential question. But the idea that James came to was that ultimately it was the black revolution that would drive the American Revolution, that the black revolution would be out in front.
I see.
And that, I think, went even beyond what the communists were doing and certainly what the Trotskyists were doing, who were not even as advanced as the communists were, at least in practice. Theoretically speaking, they wanted to be. One of the reasons that James left England and came to the Western Hemisphere was to meet with Trotsky in 1939 and try to come up with some policy on dealing with what was called the Negro question. So James was very prescient in seeing this as sort of a cutting edge, that this would be a cutting edge of the American Revolution, which, of course, after the McCarthy era, when the radical labor movement was suppressed in the 1960s, of course, this came to pass. So that was one thing that he saw. The other thing that he saw was the concept of spontaneity, which is often misunderstood. The idea is the reason that vanguard parties were necessary was because of the under-organization of workers and peasants in other historical epochs. That is, who else could organize society but small vanguards of intellectuals, for example, in peasant Russia or perhaps in more modern third world countries. But James's consideration was that the working class had evolved so much, it had learned so much in working through modern industry because of modern means of communication, learning how to master things, that the vanguard party, these small groups of people, had outlived their usefulness, and basically, in very unpredictable ways, sudden movements would break out spontaneously. Workers would arise, would create their own leaders out of nowhere, and movements would take off that no vanguard organization could predict in advance. And there are many examples of this. Of course, the Hungarian Revolution was in 1956 against the Stalinist regime. Was their major inspiration, in a sense, the linchpin of the confirmation of their viewpoint. But there was also, of course, the modern civil rights movement. Of course, it didn't come out of nowhere, but the activity that sprang up in the late 50s, again, that was not the creation of specific vanguard parties. The Polish Solidarity Movement. In other words, the framework of modern social revolutionary movements, especially in advanced industrialized countries, small vanguards were really no longer relevant to that. The goal of revolutionaries was to provide, in James's view and his view of his cohort, were to provide information. In other words, people need information, but they don't have to be led by the nose by some tiny group of people telling them what to do. So his prospects were that these movements would spring up because of the actual conditions of the time, and that they would do so very suddenly and even unpredictably.
And this obviously has important implications for the role of intellectuals in society and in revolution.
Well, that is true. Now, this is the least understood aspect of James's viewpoint, for reasons which I hope I'll have time to squeeze in. James, of course, thought that intellectuals were important at that stage in providing information. Intellectuals had played a historical role, of course, in providing the ideas for revolutions, the French Enlightenment, so many other examples. But he had felt that by the end of the 1940s, they had outlived their historical role. That is, especially in a place like the United States, that they didn't have anything new to say about society, that they had done their work in the social division of labor, of explaining of explaining society, of coming up with ideas and programs for society, and that basically they'd run out of steam. They were being basically steamrolled over by the modern organization of capitalist industry, which was basically destroying any independent basis they might have, rendering them irrelevant, and making them basically capitulate to the powers that be, whether those powers be American liberalism, whether they be Stalinist Russia, whatever they be. And he felt, and his group felt, at the end of the 1940s, that the intellectual class had run out of gas, and they had nothing else to say, and they did not have the courage to fight authority and to side with the working class, including against, elites who abused power, such as the Stalinists, for example. So he felt that intellectuals had run out of steam at that point. And also, because of his extreme hostility and suspicion of Stalinism, when he was in prison on Ellis Island, it was in 1953, by the way, he wrote the bulk of a book that summarized everything they had done over the course of 15 years, The Mariners, Renegades, and Castaways, the story of Herman Melville and the world we live in. And in that book, he has an interpretation of Melville's Moby Dick, in which the hero of the book is the crew. The villain, of course, is Ahab, but Ishmael is the vacillating intellectual who's like a educated intellectual who goes slumming to join the workers. At the same time,
interesting,
he still can't get over his temptation to submit to authority. So he submits to Ahab's authority, and James sees this as what communists do, is what liberals do, is what people on the left do. This book has not been understood. It's not been studied. It is being studied. It wasn't available because it was self-published. It has been published recently by University Press. It's available. It's being studied, but it's not being studied well. Why? Because the book is basically a condemnation of the very people reading it. That is, the book condemns the left intellectual, middle-class intellectual who wants to join the workers' movement, who feels necessity to associate with workers, to get involved in activism and movements, but cannot resolve his issues in relationship to power and authority. And that's the ultimate reason why that book has not been understood and may not be understood for decades.
And you wrote to me in an email that people cannot face James honestly because they cannot be honest about who they are. We have a couple minutes only. Ralph, what other point would you like to make about C.L.R. James in our remaining time?
Well, Jim Murray, our director, and I would like to, by the way, dedicate this broadcast to his memory. He died suddenly and tragically 6 months ago today. He had a saying.
He was a director of the C.L.R. James Institute.
That is correct. And he had a saying called C.L.R. James is a way of learning. And what that meant is not to glorify or James or turn him into an icon or exploit him or use him in many ways that he's been exploited, but to use him as a way, as a method of analyzing the world. Not necessarily agreeing with him, but using him as a way of analyzing society. That is, James as an educator, James as a way of understanding our world, not James as a revolutionary leader or model or agitator or anything else, but as a means of education. That, I think, is the key point. And I think that in the 21st century, people's relationship to James and the relationship to James as an object of study will have to change. And that therefore the people's identification with James will have to be different than what we heard, for example, in the first two talks, which represent a certain stage of social political development. But my own opinion is that our relationship to James studies will have to change very dramatically in the 21st century, and we will also have to learn not only to tell the truth about the abuses of power within the ruling classes of this world, but also about the abuses of power within the left, within the academy, and, of course, the authoritarianism and lust for power and submission to authority within our own souls.
We have to leave it right there. Ralph Dumain of the C.L.R. James Institute, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, and thank you very much.
Take care.